The following is not, I repeat, is not a paid advertisement. Clayton is one of the others. We here at the Next Step Radio Show have a mission to go find the others. If you would like to promote your product, idea, or event, email me. TheNextStepRadioShow@charter.net. That is TheNextStepRadioShow@charter.net. Remember, to truly be free, you have to let other people be free. If you want to change the world, you have to start by changing your world.
Did you know that 21 million people are starting food gardens this year for the first time? Nothing is more empowering to your personal sovereignty than growing your own food. You pay no tax on the time you spend growing your own food. Gardening is a gateway to self-sufficiency. If you want to grow some of your own food, by planting a seed, there's no better way to start your seeds than using the Soil Cube tool. I am Clayton Jacobs, and I make the Soil Cube tool. The Soil Cube tool makes 2-inch by 2-inch cubes of soil that produce the hardiest seedlings for your garden. Rediscover this 2,000-year-old technology used by the Aztecs. There are no pots, peat pellets, or anything else to buy to start your plants for your garden off right. Use your own garden soil as the containers to start your seeds. Watch our introduction video at SoilCube.com. Thank you, Antimatter Radio.
One, welcome all. This is the Next Step Radio Show. I am your host, Jacob Appleman. Here we are, found ourselves at episode 36. Don't want to do a long extended intro here because we'll get into most of that during the interview. With the anniversary of September 11th quickly approaching, the next election quickly approaching, there are a few themes that I've seen as we in the truth-seeking movement, as we progress, evolve, move on, things like that, we need to whittle down our focus, at least I feel, and it's my never-to-be-humble opinion that some of the solutions we seek are not political. It's more and more painfully obvious that maybe this system was set up to ensnare us from the beginning. And when it comes to 9/11, there are still many unanswered questions, topics unexplored, and the economy, the Ron Paulites. All this stuff is seems to be coming to a head, and I found a pretty decent path to trudge down as we approach these events. And I couldn't think of a better guest than Visigoth from Visigoth Raw, many incarnations. The grassy knoll, thinker be eaten. He's been around for a long time. He's chock full of wonderful knowledge, if you think of wonderful as true and not happy-go-lucky stuff. Anyway, don't want to belabor the point. We'll get into it in the interview. Visigoth from VisigothRaw.com and ThinkerBeEaten.com will join us today to talk about many topics, the founding of this nation, on up to 9/11 and beyond. The website for this whole thing is GoFindTheOthers.com. That is GoFindTheOthers.com. If you're listening to this on Blog Talk or somewhere else, check out that website and explore all the links for Visigoth and his work underneath this interview. Without any further ado, here we go. All right, yeah. So the history of Visigoth.
In let's see, July 2002, and this is too long a story, but the bottom line is that a guy that was working for two local radio stations, they were sister stations, decided that we should do a show. He had left the stations upon their sale, and he found an employ with St. Louis University where I was. And so we started doing the show, 1 half hour, always pre-recorded, in the basement of the library. The library is where we both worked. That begat the show. Now, we were a pirate show to begin with, but Harry, my partner, Harry Spencer, was smart in the sense that we were in a rural section of Florida. We didn't step on any frequencies of any radios and even VHF TV. And so in that sense, we weren't getting in anybody's way, but we were still a pirate. But we were only about 25, 30 miles northeast of the FCC office in Tampa, and they started going around and snooping, not for us necessarily, but they had caught a couple of pirate, very famous pirate broadcasters in Temple Terrace and in Lutz, surrounding towns of Tampa. And he got a little nervous about it because, I mean, the jail time and the fines were just ridiculous. So he said, you know, I don't know if we can do this any longer. And I said, fine. So I went into the AM stations and cut a deal, and that's where we began doing that for a number of years. It's been a movable feast throughout this whole time. It's not been really easy, but I've kept it going now, and we're beginning our 10th year. But going back before that, what made me even get involved in conspiracy is being born in 51. I was cognizant, if you will, although disinterested, in talk from a lot of veterans. My father's friends, you know, I get brought to the softball game, I get brought back to the bar, they give me a Coke, and they tell me to play shuffleboard, and I hear stuff that didn't jive with what I would later find in history texts. And I didn't really care, in a sense, because I wanted to go on with my life. I mean, God, I'm 8 years old, 7 years old, but I never forgot it. And then later on, through the 60s, more stuff started to happen that didn't make sense. And without going into a harangue, I'll give you an example of a couple of things. You know, I'm sitting there, I'm a pretty good student, I believe in what I read, and then things come up like, teacher, what's a lobbyist? Well, you know, they're there to talk to the congressman. I'm like, teacher, but like, any place else that be called bribery? So, it's like, well, never mind, don't worry, you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay, you go on and on. And then I started running into people who had war experiences, and I'll give you an example of this one real quick, too. And that is in Germany. In the end of World War II, some grunts in Germany, in the trenches, were getting their balls busted by the German version of Tokyo Rose. I mean, people don't realize that through radios and stuff, both the Allies and the Axis went after each other. And what happened with the Germans was saying, you know, you guys are so stupid, you can't find these physical plants because you can't bomb, you know, if you could, you'd bomb them, and you can't find them, you're idiots. And then what happened a couple of days later, so this gentleman told me, and this happened in D.C., by the way, in 76, he said that news came down the trench that the Allies had indeed gone over and bombed those very physical plants with garbage and furniture to show the Germans, yeah, we know where they are, but they won't let us destroy them. He said, at that time, when I was in the trenches with the other guys, we said, I don't give a shit who wins this thing. Our job is to get home alive. Now, again, just two stories, but it builds this whole fabric of what's really going on. And then I found stuff with Vietnam, and then later on, and it got to the point that, you know, around 2000, I said to myself, you know, what is there something going on? Oh, have we been lied to? Is this whole thing really, the joke is on us? And in late 2000 and in early 2001, I started to read and research. And along the way, I said to my wife, look, what I'm going to do is not going to be really popular. And I got to make sure that it's right. I said, but you might want to take a look at this as we go along because you got to know about it. And she said, okay. And that's what happened. I mean, not that she vetted everything, but I said, look at this. So, you know, you realize then, yes, the sad truth is we've been lied to, and the biggest problem in America is that Americans have been propagandized into believing they can't be propagandized. So, I mean, that's as it pertains to conspiracy. As far as me, I got out of college in 75. My first job was with the FBI, and that didn't last too long. We mutually decided to part ways. And I got into journalism, and I also got involved in coaching because I had played in the minors before I had finished college. I kind of went 2 years, stayed out, played ball, went back 2 years and finished. So, I mean, that's it for me, and there's nothing really special about anything I've done except that from the very beginning, I've been a reader and a writer, and in 2000, I applied it to find out whether or not there really was a conspiracy, and there certainly is.
Right, and your progression has taken different focuses along the way, like most people, colloquially, post 9/11 fall into the Alex Jones GCN camp. Right. Some people go into the Way Out, Pleiadians and channeling camp. A lot of people stay asleep with their Fox News and their CNN. But I've noticed in being aware of your work for the past several years that, you're always willing to take in more information and kind of, pull the wheel to the right or the left, whatever obstacles may seem to be in the road instead of, being obstinate and just smashing into things. Maybe if we could work backwards, in the political realm, the geopolitical, in your face, mainstream versus alternative, what the hell's going on scenario. Let's do a mini progression through that, what you found, with your lots of reading and researching, where this thing took you from, they're lying to us to, secret societies to the real political structure, the bankers, that kind of thing, and kind of where you're at currently.
I stopped voting in 2000 because I realized that it really doesn't matter. People get all worked up about that, but it's a point of like, well, what's the big deal? Well, somebody bad might get in. They all suck. It doesn't make a difference. And that's one of the other things also. How many elections have been thrown that we've been told, oh, it was a different thing, like Truman's famous photo of him holding up a paper that said Dewey wins? No, that's things go bump in the night, and elections are stolen. Hayes had the election stolen from Tilden in 1876, I believe it was. Things happen in the wee small hours of the morning. Kennedy had the election stolen for him in 60. This thing, all this stuff happens at like 2 to 4 a.m., and then what happened was a manipulation to get voters to vote the way that the handlers want them to. If it doesn't work out, they got to steal the election. And they got sloppy in 2000 here in Florida, and they got sloppy in 2004. But by 2000, I realized the government, the politicians don't do anything. They stay out there. They put on a good Punch and Judy show. You've never seen the acrimony so deep between both parties as you do now. And that's because those who run this country don't run for office, and they're getting closer to their goal. And, I mean, as it applies to personages in this side of the Atlantic, take a look at the robber barons at the end of the 19th century, the fortunes they amassed. Then they went about the process of buying politicians until the point where they had them all, and they didn't have to worry about buying them. They dictated everything. And you're looking at Rockefeller and Carnegie and Morgan and Vanderbilt, the bankers also, Schiff, Kuhn, Loeb. And then I realized that it is true that bankers run the show, at least on a secular level, and I'll leave it at that for now, and that politicians just go up there and just play a role. Are they all bad? Just about. But you could see that there were good ones throughout the 50s, and it seems to me that through the 50s, the last clear, honest voices were drowned out, and it was pretty much game, set, match. If there's anybody good that gets in there, and I bring up the example of Adam Putnam from Florida, who was in Congress, seen as a pretty straight guy, we believe he was, but he stopped. I mean, he got reelected all the time. He just didn't want to go back. And we never talked to him or anything like that, but Harry and I used to say, he might have been the real deal. But if you are, you'll not get anything done because you'll be ostracized if you don't play the game. And I think he just extricated himself from the system, and I think he's now the head of the State Department of Agriculture. When we first came in, the very show I did with Harry was about secret societies because it's interesting, it's spooky, and it is very widespread, but underneath the surface. But if you stay there, you don't really find, the real perpetrators. To me, not the secret societies are there to deflect and distract, but if you stay there, you stay there. And a lot of people do, and it, like I said, it's spooky and oogie boogie and all that other jazz, but you'll just stay there. So we continue to pursue what was going on. And one of the things about working in a library, and it was just fortuitous. While I was there, I had to handle donations that came into the school, which there were very few, except in a very short period of time, I'd say about 16 months. We got three donations from former history professors, two of whom had expired, and the one just wanted to divvy up his collection. Well, they came in. I went through them, but I'm not the one that was going to, you know, chooses what gets in and what gets out. And when I saw what was going to be thrown out, I jumped on it. And I'll give you an example of one of the books, and that was The Ominous Parallels by Leonard Peikoff, which I've done a series on. And what that tells us about the way we were in the 80s and where we were going this very day, Peikoff hit it right on the head. And there were other books, and they were going to throw them out. So I took them, and I read them, and it just blew my mind. You know, without going on about each one, but there was another one that was a transcript of a two-day speech given at Harvard in 1955 by a Republican who was pretty dominant in the Republican Party in the state of New York from Buffalo, John Lord O'Brien, O-B-R-I-A-N, not the classic, you know, I-E-N. And the speech was named Security and Anxiety. Security in an Age of Anxiety, excuse me, I still have it. What he said about watching out, about giving up security, giving up liberty for security, he says, watch it. This is 1955, and this guy was all over it. And then I realized, you know, there has been a process to whittle away at the liberties of the people, and it's not politicians that keep them pristine. So eventually all that research led up to The Informer. Now, I sought him out. He didn't seek me out. The last thing I had to learn was whether or not the story about this founding of this country and all this other bullshit about, oh, you know, Jehovah loved us, so he carved this country out for us and he made sure nothing harmed us, if that were true, if the founding fathers were really good guys. And I had a feeling that that and the Constitution were also fairy tales. That's what I came to without The Informer. Eventually I found him and I asked him if he would do a series of interviews with me, and he did. And that's when I realized, you know, I'm sorry to say this, but the game is lost. You know, I hear all the Patriot radio stations about, oh, you know, we can get our Constitution back. It was never yours to begin with. Oh, we can get our country back. No, it was never yours to begin with. Oh, we can vote in good government. Impossible. That's the truth. Now, people are going to sit there and get all upset about it, and you're going to get emails, and I'm going to get emails, but I can't, and you don't want me to harangue here about all the research that's taken place to find out that that is very true. It's in law books. It's in public laws. It's all over the place, but it's not anything that is being brought up to any of us in our public education. We are very much shielded from it because it's understood nobody's really going to go that far.
And even in the non-public, you know, educational paradigm, a lot of people want to steer you away from that understanding and or right back into the system. If you've, let's say, lost your faith in the priest class politician, but I think that's an important point. That yes, there are, because a lot of people want to do the Ron Paul thing and the Cynthia McKinney thing, and you can't blame them because they're right. They're right in that sense. You know, the lesser of two evils has gotten us down a path of, you know, stepping, you know, half a step at a time backwards toward the, you know, goal of evil. And a lot of these people, you know, I would qualify as the lesser of three evils. So maybe we're taking, you know, just a third of a step backwards, you know, into the pit of Hades. And yeah, that's better than a half step or a full step. But the system itself is designed to, you know, funnel you right into the eye of Horus or the pit of hell or what, however people want to conflagrate the capstone and where the institutions are designed. But that's also the beauty and the brilliance of the system, is that there are glimmers of hope that, you know, possibly one day maybe, you know, you could take a archonic, Luciferian, satanic, however you want to term it, system and turn it wholesome through lots of elbow grease and Xerxes or whoever it was that pushed that rock up the hill over and over and over. Maybe one day you'll make it all the way to the top, but you know, let's look at the fact that maybe we're not, and let's push this thing around the bottom of the hill. Let's avoid the hill. So yeah, that's a paradigm I see a lot of people who wake up get stuck right back into as well. How can we, you know, beat the system in its own game? And you know, there, like I said, there's lots of clues and paths of possibility, but in totality, the whole damn thing is rigged. And that's where I went with my research into, you know, the Treaty of Paris, the Anti-Federalist Papers, the Federalist Papers, you know, the 17 presidents before George Washington, you know, and people take the time to sit and read these. It's obvious this thing wasn't geared for us. You know, the people seeking freedom and the escape of oppression in colonial Europe, you know, definitely had in their hearts and souls, I believe, the forging mentality of creating something much better. And those are the people that got here and pushed west and eventually passed the Mississippi and did have, you know, intentions of building something freer than had ever been seen. But that got hijacked real quickly. Sure. By whatever group you want to associate the name to, Illuminati, the Freemasons, what have you. You know, that honest intention of people desiring to build something better, which they did. You know, it's not like they said, oh, let's go to America, you know, and write the Constitution and then we'll be free. No, a bunch of people risked life, limb, and treasure, got their asses over here, put in the blood, sweat, and tears to make it happen, and then retroactively was hijacked by, you know, these talismanic cults that know how to use language and different forms of contract law to beguile and dazzle the average city dweller who's just happy with his porridge and circus. But the institution itself is the problem. And yeah, without belaboring the whole thing, that's a huge reason, you know, why I wanted to have you on my show is to point that you've done a ton of this work, because a lot of people toss around sovereignty and, you know, maybe the founding fathers weren't this or maybe they were that. Where you just kind of cut through all that shit and get right to the core of what did these documents say, what was their intent, you know, and what has it, you know, what fruit has it bore? You by their fruits ye shall know them. Okay, you know, maybe we could argue about which politician, you know, had good intentions and which ones didn't. But the system itself is designed to do exactly what it's done. And for that, it needs to not be fought, fed, or contorted any longer. And you've done a massive amount of research in that regard. So if you want to, at this point, just do an all-out plug for your Informer series and that whole bit where people can find that information if they're of similar ilk and have a feeling that Ron Paul may not be our savior, but want you know, some concrete to that foundation. Yeah, just go ahead and plug all that information and where it's found and that whole bit.
Right, one of the things too that people should get hip to, and that is for those who listen to you and perhaps me, may also listen to GCN and RBN and all that other stuff. I had dealings with GCN very deeply, but going beyond that, my point is this. When you do something for money, whether it's to make a little pocket change or whether it should be your whole livelihood, I'm going to tell you right now, this is 100% accurate maxim, and that is money changes everything. You can't alienate your listeners. You must have a base that listens so advertisers feel that they have a chance, obviously, to sell product, and that goes on in the Patriot stations. I had a show that was on AM stations down here, and I had advertising, but they were local merchants who were produce stands and no MSG restaurants and stuff like that. Yeah, it was the same thing. They didn't dictate to me, and they never would dictate to me. But when you get involved with other concerns, you got to make sure that you're selling product, and that changes everything. And therefore, what I'm saying is Patriot Radio is every bit as bad as your alphabet networks out there. Now, having said that, I mean, we always flew our own flag. It's not been easy. But the one thing I would not do is let anybody be a master over me financially, and that has never happened. What I have done is, just recently, I've set up a couple of audio collections that are for sale. I mean, I've lost about 10 grand in this operation or more, about 1,000 or more a year, sometimes worse than others. Nobody asked me to do it. Nobody asked me to keep it going. I understand that. I'd like to stop the bleeding a little bit, but if it doesn't, I'm prepared for that. So I do have some stuff up. But the one thing we're going to talk about is the CD Informer. That is a CD that's offered for sale. The proceeds go to Angie, who has been very good to both of us, I think we can say.
Absolutely.
Very generous, yes, and she's, you know, she's selfless, And so the proceeds of that CD go to Angie for the work that she's helped me do and you do and everyone else. It's not a big deal. That's got a lot of great stuff on it, and you have to sit down and listen to it. I guess it's over 20 hours or so, I'm assuming. And that's where we kind of take it from the very beginning to the end in that whole progression. Other than that, I mean, my site's visigothraw.com. It is tied to the hip with thinkorbeeaten.com. Your site's up there as well. And that's it. I mean, that's all I'm doing. If some people, I know, take donations. People have done it from time to time. I don't like it. Yeah, have I taken it? Yes. but two times with very bizarre outcomes, and that's why I really don't like it. So I put some product up because if you want to help out, that's fine. Just buy a CD. I don't want something for nothing. I want a quid pro quo. And that's how it stands right now. So visigothraw.com. In days gone by, it's been visigoth.com. It's been beyond the grass. You know, this is like the fourth manifestation of the show I've done as I've moved from the AM stations back to a home podcast type of deal. And it shows the progression with me, too. We have the archives up on thinkorbeeaten.com. We're going to run about 6 years' worth of it. I think we're probably in year three now of past shows. And I just do that for the education process. You know, and that's okay. I feel it's my reasonable sacrifice. And it's not a very pleasant message. Therefore, not many want to believe it. But that doesn't make it not true.
Right.
And as you've heard me say, I mean, the two greatest lines, one from Robinson Jeffers, is that the cold passion for truth hunts in no pack. And Henrik Ibsen, who said the majority is never right. Sorry to say. I mean, I don't get arcane just that to be in the majority. But I have to say there's a reason why those guys said that. Jefferson, 44. Ibsen, back at the turn of the century. 19th and the 20th, that would be. And you know, that's where we go. Now, I'll tell you what. A lot of people believe in Ron Paul. Paul says nice things. They resonate with people. Even Beck has done the same thing. Everybody, though, out there is half-loaded when they go with the information. They tell you about the Federal Reserve, but they don't tell you what the Federal Reserve is connected to and that it doesn't stop with the Federal Reserve. No Federal Reserve chairman has been an employee of the United States. Every single one that's been offered has been okayed by Congress because that's the guy that's supposed to be there. But the Fed takes your money, as it has had for over a century, and brings it over to Europe. Believe it or not, that's where it's at. I just had somebody on to speak to that. The informer said the same thing. And this woman found that she went to Strasbourg, Austria. She goes into this palace and she finds in this one room, a resource room if you want to call it, binders full of IRS tax codes. What she found out was the Marshall Plan that rebuilt Europe. We rebuilt it. We didn't know we did, but we rebuilt it. So, I mean, so that's how things go. But with Ron Paul, he says the right things, just enough to get himself reelected. But here's what happened to me, and this is why I have to laugh about people popping off their mouths about freedom in America. I was in this group that was built around organic farming, and it was really a health thing. Well, some of the conversation and the email distributions turned to politics, and I'm looking at all this Republican and Democrat stuff. So I'm like, okay, man, you know, if that's what you want to do, then I'm chiming in. Well, I'll tell you what, all these women and yuppie guys who talk about freedoms and freedom of expression and freedom of this, when I got done with them, they wanted to kill me. They wanted me censored. And I said, my only point, folks, is this. Here's the thing. There are no freedoms in America. Your freedoms are determined by something other than what's written in the Constitution or the preamble, which doesn't even belong to us. And when you don't like inconvenient or unpleasant speech, what's the first thing you do? Defend my right for it and discuss it? No, you want to censor it. So what the hell different are you than any fascist nation? And then they're like, whoops. And I told them about Ron Paul. I played audio where Ron Paul talked to Alex Jones one way, and I juxtaposed the same issues when he was on Fox. He talks out of both sides of his neck. He's a politician, folks. Don't you freaking get it?
Right,
they're politicians,
and I want to thank you for pointing that out. Those two separate clips made it in a recent suicide I made, and it's pretty interesting. And I also added in there a clip with Tim Russert giving him a hard time, and you know Ron Paul is coming back with all the right answers about pork barrel spending and the things, because he's, you know, a lot of people refer to him as Dr. No for everything he says no to, but Tim Russert brought out a list of things that he said yes to. That you know, didn't
questionable, yeah,
didn't quite jive, and he had some, you know, some good answers. That, you know, he's representing his constituency, and they asked him to vote for it and this and that. He knew it would be defeated, so he still did what they said, and, you know, all this and that and this and that. And he goes, well, you know, you've also campaigned about term limits, and you've been in Congress for 30 years. And he's like, you know, it is his Ron Paul hesitations, which cracked me up. But, yeah, he's...
Let me read you something. I'm going to send this along to you to back it up if you haven't had access to it. The Informer sent this to me in the body of an email. He said, just to back it up a little bit, he talks about the bank holiday. Our lives and this whole nation took a serious turn in 1932 and 1933. It said, same as today, folks. That's why a bank holiday closed all banks for 6 days so they could all be licensed to deal with the enemy. That's another whole story. That's us. It's still buried in 12 U.S.C. 95 A and B if you care to research it. And while you're at it, pull 12 Stat 319 that made the American the enemy of the Congress. Read it if you don't believe me. I'm going to hit you with one more paragraph and it won't go on. And I'll send this to you. Plus, I pulled that legislation. So if you're interested in it, I'll send it along to you. And if any of your listeners want to get a hold of it, you can give it to them.
Sure.
Here's the last one. He said, Ron Paul said to me that he would not repeal those laws if made president. Eliminating them would make us all the free people we were before Lincoln installed 12 Stat 319 in 1862 under General Orders 100, also known as the Lieber Code, under Francis Lieber, that created the General Orders 100 to control anyone from questioning the government. Why do you think they created the Fatherland Security here? It's the same as Hitler did in Germany. No difference except different countries. The government is the biggest terrorist ever. And I'll stop right there. But you see, he had a conversation with Paul. Paul just says enough cosmetic things to make everybody get warm and fuzzy with him, and I would too. I'd be right there. But I realized something too, and if you want to speak to this, by all means. Folks, take a look around. Government is nothing but one failed experiment after another. Oh, you can say, well, this fell because of this and that fell. Look, it doesn't last. It never has. It never will. And not to get religious on people, but to me, one of the biggest overlooked passages in the New Testament is Luke 4:5, where Satan tells Christ, these are my kingdoms to give to whomsoever I wish. He wasn't just talking about then. It's all at one time. And that's my point. Government is corrupt. It's human beings. And there isn't a human collective on the face of the earth, whether you're a Cub Scout pack or not, that doesn't get corrupted by certain personages. It just comes with the flesh. Sorry, but that's the way it is. Either get used to it or, you know, go chasing a pipe dream the rest of your life. You know, I got off the train, man. That was enough for me. And I was disappointed. But heck, I mean, you know, life goes on. There's still plenty of things, you know, to love and cherish. And you don't have to spend a lot of money doing it.
Right. Yeah. The Messiah wasn't, you know, canvassing neighborhoods and doing the community organizing bit to run for office. There was a slightly different message there. So,
well, yeah. I mean, that's what I say to Christians. I'm like, look, where did the Christ say, oh, and my Great Commission is run for office, get involved in politics?
Right.
I mean, it's there, but people don't listen to it. I mean, they have preachers that are sold out to dominionism and warfare and stuff they pull out of the Old Testament, which was vacated by the new one. Yeah, I got a mouth on me, folks. You're wondering, well, how can you say fuck? Well, I did. All right, okay, that's the way it goes. But check out the word for yourself.
Right,
and,
well,
good.
I'll just say the Messiah cursed the fig tree. So, I mean, it's, you know, when he threw the money changers out of the temple, I believe there was a few smacks in the face and the table got turned over.
But is that, here's one thing. This is great. It was prophesied to happen, so it had to. But there was something very symbolic about the class of people. Jesus could raise the dead, change water into wine, heal sick, give blind people sight. But the day he chased the bankers out of the temple, 3 days later, he was before Pilate. And there's a message there. And that's the way it's always been. And if folks, if you get a chance, you can read this online. And that is called, David Astle wrote a book, The Babylonian Woe. That's it. He's now passed. The book is online. It is, I mean, when I printed it out, it was thick as your fist on end. But if you go in there, you'll see how banking began right from Babylon. Are bankers bad people in your local community? No. I mean, we're all locked into the system of usury and everything else. But it shows you right from the very beginning that Satan got into a system which he has promulgated into mercantilism, and that really is what is the nature of founding countries. It's not a place to give huddled masses yearning to be free a place to go. It's just a new market as far as they're concerned.
Right.
And this country was no different.
the great big help wanted sign underneath the goddess
hanging
of
on the porch.
The goddess of Minerva. But another point relating that to Ron Paul, you know, a lot of people want to come at him. Oh, I saw a picture where he was giving a Freemasonic handshake. You know, I mean, what would that even mean?
I didn't buy that either. You're right.
Whether he was or he wasn't, how's that going to solve, you know, the gas price in your town? But the piece that's ultra obvious that I can't believe I didn't pick up on sooner is the Austrian School of Economics, and where a lot of truthers are, you know, hip to John Taylor Gatto and Charlotte Iserbeat in the promulgation of direct and deliberate mind control through mass education. You know, and let's not forget our friends, the Nazis. A lot of this stuff came from Austria, and the Ludwig von Mises Institute is another stick in that bound fasci of a weapon of mass destruction that I don't know how that slips past people, that this Austrian crowd wasn't, you know, helping out the little guy. And he promotes that like gangbusters. And if, like I said, people are familiar with John Taylor Gatto or what, you know, Hitler was all about, you know, we're looking at a branch of the same crowd. Mm-hmm. And that should be obvious. And tying that into usury, I've been on the economic tip in my radio career. And I mentioned to you in an earlier conversation that my very first show broadcast on FM radio was about the Federal Reserve. So I've been paying attention to this, you know, for quite a while also. And when people want to talk about the economy in any way, shape, or form, you know, barter is a ancient term, but, you know, it's trading. I've got this and you've got that. Let's switch. You know, I know how to do this. You don't know how to do this. Let's trade. When that comes in the form of gold nuggets, gold bars, gold coins, silver coins, paper, tally sticks, you know, raccoon pelts, whatever that modicum of exchange, if both parties agree upon it, then it's a fair trade. Usury, the implementation of interest or this money. See, because, you know, everybody says, well, they just print the money out of thin air. It's backed by nothing. Well, you know, neither are gold coins. I mean, they're backed by mining, but that doesn't put any real tangible value on it. It's a modicum of exchange. Usury, the interest, that's the part that doesn't exist. I know how to paint a house. You have a whole coop full of chickens. I'm hungry. Let's trade. The usury, the interest, that's the phony part. That's, you know, the chickens are real. Your ability to paint is real. Interest is not real. Usury is not real. That is the part of the whole entire equation, whether you want to go from, you know, the goldsmiths of yesteryear, the Knights Templars, you know, wanting a cut of their banking establishments on the way to the Holy Land. All of that usury tips that thing out of balance. It's culminated currently in, you know, collateralized debt obligations in a quadrillion-dollar derivatives bubble. But the interest is the one and only problem. It's not that the money's paper. It's not that it's gold. It's not that it's silver. Usury is the one and only problem. That is where the imbalance comes from. And Ron Paul avoids that like the plague. He's all about some usury and some Austrians. So I don't know how Christians, truthers, and or people just asking questions haven't ran across that yet.
I get anger directed at me because I'm called a pessimist and a fatalist. Once again, that doesn't make me wrong. But I've taken a look at the way things are, how they've been, and I can probably pretty much figure out where they're going to go. And it is not going to change. And think about what everybody's going through right now. We had a panic of sorts in 08. Things are not looking too good for investors. And let me just add this. I found this out very early on. And I sat down with my wife. This was a major decision. And I said, listen, from what I've researched and what I've told you, they're going to take everything we got if we keep it in someone else's hands. So I said, here's, and remember, we had, well, you don't remember, but rhetorically you remember, we got beaten down in 87, around 92, I think, 2001. And after that one, and I don't care what causes, you know, supposedly 9/11, whatever, I don't care. It happens every so often. You get your ass beat if you're in mutual funds and stuff. So I said to her, I go, look, we have to make a decision. If we think that money's going to be there for us when we need it, we stay in. But if we think it won't be, we get out, and we get out now. We cashed in all our 401ks, everything we had, settled with the government, and we went into the process in 2002 of buying gold and silver. I'm not in any stocks, nothing. That isn't to say I wouldn't like maybe playing around. I'm not a day trader, but to go in and hit and get out, that's the only way you're going to do it. If you stay in there, you're going to get beaten down. And this last time, it was only, what, 7 years
right.
between the panics. Because that's the way the whole situation is set up.
So, right, yeah, it's designed that way to implode at some point. No matter what camp you subscribe to, most people agree that the current value of the dollar since the inception of the Federal Reserve in 1913 has decreased 97%, 98%, some say 99% of its value. Well, that's a direct tie into inflation, which is a direct tie into the culmination of all this usury and interest.
Yeah.
And if you were a 98-year or 99-year investor, you would have had to have found something that was over 100% on return just to barely keep your head above water. You know, a 200% return on an investment to double your money. Nobody did that in a 100-year span. If you break it down into quarter centuries, you know, you're looking at 30%, which is impossible. And if you break it down into, decades or even multiple years or quarters, you know, inflation currently by the fixed numbers, if you want to go conservative, is 8, 9, 10%. Well, you know, fantastic. Have you got an 8, 9, 10% raise in any of these years? No, you haven't. All investments are losers. Like you said, if you want to do the hit and quit thing, you know, you can come above water most of the time. But the economy as a whole is always designed. The interest will outpace the growth 100% of the time, because that's why they fluctuate the damn interest rates. Because if the growth is X, they're going to make interest Y. You know, if the growth is B, they're going to make interest A. So it's, you know, like I tell people, the casinos aren't big and beautiful and full of, lots of things if everybody went there to win, right?
And that's, I always laugh because that's what Andy Sr. came up with that line. He goes, we're just chips in the big casino. And that's really true. And as people see, here's what I'm saying, that the acrimony between Republicans and Democrats gets so much deeper now, because we're getting raped more and more. But people are so caught up in this frenzy about, I hate your party, you hate my party, because people don't vote for whom they want. They vote against the other party. That's how sick it's gotten. But in the meantime, the dust storm they've raised off with their fighting, they can't see that the government isn't doing anything. They go out there and they run their mouth and do the old Kazinga. And in the meantime, the bankers do exactly what they want. Nobody spanks the bankers. Nobody spanks Wall Street. Did anybody hear about the raises they got last year? No, they just shut their mouth about it, but they got them. I mean, it's ridiculous. They never lose. And while we're trying to get government to stand up for us, we're still getting our butts kicked. And what's a serious problem in this America, in this United States, I mean, I'm seeing ads now popping up on websites that show some like forlorn person saying, bring back jobs to America. Is that pathetic?
Right.
Are we begging? But you know what? It's right. But here's what I said, too. You know, everybody pops off about patriotism. Well, stick it up your ass. The only thing I know about patriotism is when they want to kill me or somebody, or they want to take more money from me. But corporations, they don't have to be patriotic. They go where they want to. They pull jobs out, and they want to come back and sell the product at twice as much as they do anywhere else. And somehow, some way, corporations don't have to be patriotic. Why? Well, it's laissez-faire. You know, in Keynes, hey, look, they're screwing us. They were birthed here. Why doesn't somebody turn around and say, look, you start here, you stay here, or we'll give you an incentive not to go someplace else? That never happens. So since the 70s, and you remember this to a certain extent, maybe not, but we've been four decades and getting bled to death. Jobs gone, means of production gone, you know, and we've been reduced pretty much to a colony again.
Right.
And that's deliberate. We are being deliberately destroyed. And the last thing they're going to do to us after they bled us of all our money, they're going to bleed us of our best blood, because we're headed for another war. Believe that, only this time we don't come out on top. Because every empire, with the exception of the Brits, has come to an end when they're no longer needed. And you can take a look at the Nazi regime, you can look at Napoleon, you know, scourged everything, but there came a time when they did stupid things, which of course were scripted, and that was the end of it. Guess what? We're on that path right now, and we don't know it.
Right, and You know, that should be plainly obvious to people at this point. You know, the political situation will not be solved politically. The economic situation will not be solved, economically. And the spiritual thing will not be solved commercially. So a lot of people do need to get their head out of their ass, let go of the programming, and we can all differ on actual solutions, whether it's free energy, getting out from underneath it, making the thing crash, what's his name? He's on Alex Jones all the time. He's kind of squirrely and funny.
Salenti?
No, Max. Max is coming to mind. He's got ideas of, everybody shorting, like Coca-Cola was his first example.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The financial guy, yeah.
Max Kaiser. Yeah. Kaiser. You know, and all of these are worth tossing around, but I think a lot of people need to figure out quickly that no mutual fund has ever netted 200%, return.
No.
Gone. Real estate property has ever, outpaced property tax. Nobody's wages have ever raised past inflation. So the answers aren't there.
Let me run something by you. And we can make me laugh a little bit about this, because if you don't, you're going to go insane. Kaiser had some good ideas, but now that he's with Jones, I don't know. At any rate, I'm to a mind now where, like the Emperor's New Clothes, I'm wondering, now just consider this, if the World Banking Establishment has exactly what it needs. God knows how much gold and silver they have. When Ron Paul ran some grandstand move to say, we ought to audit the gold in Lexington, Kentucky at Fort Knox,
right.
Forget about it, it's not going to happen. Secondly, you know what? I don't think you'll find anything there, sorry to say. But here's where I want to go with it. Could it possibly be that got everything they need, and at what point does money become, like, imaginary? In other words, they don't print money anymore. When you hear that statement about the Fed printing money, they don't even print money. It's electrons. That's all it is. It's
right.
Electrons. And what I'm saying right now is, I'm thinking, and I make the example of Wile E. Coyote trying to cross from one butte precipice to another, going over a canyon. He's fine until he looks down. When he looks down, it's over.
Yep.
But what I'm thinking is that we are working on absolutely nothing. There's nothing there. It just works just like you said, whether it's tally sticks or ballpoint pens or whatever you want to call it. Right now, we're on thin air. There's nothing there anymore. It just works because everybody believes it that it works, but there's going to be a time where they're going to pull the plug on this whole thing, and we'll realize, like Wiley, that there is nothing under us and see at the bottom of the canyon. Now, I'm really asking you that, Jacob. What do you think as far as the fact that there is no money anymore?
No, that's the point I've been making here, especially recently when people want to talk about the debt crisis. We're $14 trillion in the hole, if a $14 trillion debt doesn't wipe you out, a $16 trillion one won't either.
But now, all right, I'm going to ask you. Do you think that debt's payable?
No, there's not enough tally sticks or beaver pelts around. I don't think people really grip how big a trillion is. And I had a little rendition on one of my web postings where you have $100 bill. It's a picture. The next picture is $100,000. It's a stack of $100 bills. The next picture is $1 million of hundreds. You can fit it like in a duffel bag. The next picture is $1 billion. It fits like on a crate. You can move around with a pallet jack. And then a trillion is like, the size of the Pentagon, a stack of hundreds. And 14 trillion, 16 trillion, 18 trillion, it's not there. It's never payable. And then if you add in all the Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid, the derivatives, the collateralized debt, all of the pension plans that are so-called private, we're looking at hundreds of quadrillions of dollars that don't exist.
No. There's no way we're going to be able to pay that. A funny example, I got to watch this once in a while, but I go to a credit union, which has been very good. I don't really keep a lot in there. We're just pretty much a repository for whatever electrons we use to pay our electric bills. But one day I went in there. In fact, all right, I'll tell the truth. It was last week. Very quiet. Two young women are at the their kiosks or whatever. And I know them, so I can say this. So we're doing a transaction, and I lean back and going, so who insures this? And there's a sign there for credit unions. It's like, I don't know, NJUAC or something like that. I don't know. It's not the FDIC.
Right, the NCUA.
All right, there you go. And I'm going, well, they go that. I'm going, okay, but who backs them? And they look at each other. I'm going, well, the full faith and credit of the American government, right? They're like, yeah. I'm going, well, if we're $14 trillion in debt, like maybe we're bankrupt. And they looked at each other like, ooh. I'm like, and they look, oh, it's always interesting when you come in here.
Right.
Also, I got to send you this also, the FDIC fiction, where a former head of the FDIC said it's not there. It's not there. I mean, you're not going to get paid. We had a bank foreclosure problem here. Did you have one there? Are you?
Yeah, I used to keep track of all that, but just like my cable subscription, my bank subscription went bye-bye a long time ago. So,
okay.
My economy collapsed several years ago. Like you, I have an account that's open with a few cents to a few dollars floating around in it in case I have to make a digital transaction, but none of my money is kept in any institution.
And that's what we did too. I mean, I keep some emergency cash on hand. I would like to go back into something, but I'm staying in bullion coins, gold bullion coins, silver dollars, and 100-ounce, troy-ounce silver bars, and that's what we have. And I know that that's not, you see, nothing really is foolproof. The powers that be, as we move to a world government, can do whatever they want to do. So as much as I feel I got a chance to have another play above other folks, they could turn around and they could just make an edict that said, okay, we're banning any transactions that people use with silver coin, you know, specie, whatever, and that's it. Now,
yep.
Now all of a sudden I'm a drug dealer that has to do a back alley deal. So I'm not laughing at anybody. I'm just saying that I think I'm a little bit ahead of the game because the assets are in my hands, not somebody else's. And so therefore I feel that I could play another day. But I definitely could be stymied by anything. And there's the point, too. Now, people are going to be sitting there, and they're going to be saying, well, what's the answer? What's the solution? All I'm going to say, and the Lord can use a donkey. He can use me. I'm just saying that there is no earthly solution, and I think people are coming to an understanding of that. I'm not pushing any religion. I mean, you know, I'm not anything, but I do know that the answer is not human beings.
Right.
That's all I can tell you. So, you know, you feel the same way, too, but I'm telling you the only way out of this is up, and I'm sorry to say, but that is what it's – I mean, I'm not really sorry to say, but if you're looking for people to get you out of this, governments and associations, and it ain't going to happen. And people should really take a look at the fate of liberty around the world and understand that it is definitely on the decline. And no worse a case of it is here. We have more to lose, so we're not in such desperation as other nations have been in. But we're on our way out, and it's not going to turn around. That's the thing. It's not going to be a rebound. It's not going to be a dead cat bounce. We are done.
Right.
We just don't know it yet.
Yeah, and I like to explain to people there isn't one solution. There are just directions you can head in. So once you realize that this is a blind alley or that's a rabbit trail or that's a red herring, you know, those are directions you can avoid. That doesn't mean I have the path plotted from point A to point B with specific steps and no misdirection. You know, I know which way not to go, and by taking that approach constantly and, you know, plotting it off into the future, you know, there's directions to head, but there's not, let's say, a destination to be reached. And same with, you know, researching all this information. There's not, you know, a holy grail that you're going to find. It seems to me that the research and the mind expansion and the you know, exploring of different avenues is the point of the thing, not to find the truth, but to seek the truth. It's the seeking. We're human beings. We got to do something. You know, it's not, we're not human, you know, be delivered to's. We're human beings. It's not going to come to you. You've got to go towards it. So, yeah, I agree. There are no solutions. There's only directions you can head. And like you said, it's up. Some people would say it's inside. Some people say it's a small circle around you. However you want to term it. Yeah, there's no solutions, just directions.
Yeah, and that's not satisfactory, I understand. But the thing is, the alternative is to throw yourself on the feet of the state. And that's the idea. And eventually, there'll be no religion because that's part of the plan. But the state will be the religion. You can call religion whatever you want. I never got all bent out of shape when they, quote, threw the Bible out of the schools because it was like, well, you know, actually, this is not a theocracy, and you can't be shoving the Bible down people's throats who don't want it. You can't mandate it. You know, I mean, the Lord was never, like, rude. He said, if you'll open the door, I'll come through. But he's not going to break it down.
Right.
But my point was, if you take that out, don't put anything else in its place. Don't fill the vacuum with any other quasi-fall spirituality, and of course that has happened in many designs. One of them is radical environmentalism. So, yeah, don't be preaching anything then. I'm fine with that. But if you kick out the Bible, then don't put anything else in its place. Just let it go. But that is not the case, as you know.
Right. And one more piece on Ron Paul that will actually segue us into the next portion. If people think the solutions are political and they want to try that one more time and they think that somebody representing them is the way to go, I'm befuddled by how many 9/11 truthers are behind a guy who thinks,
right,
not, 9/11 wasn't an inside out job. So, you know, it's the economy. He's wrong on that. The geopolitical genesis of all things awry being 9/11. He's not with you on that. Those two planks to me are non-negotiable at this point. Well, he's being strategic about his 9/11 views, and he's going to wait until he's president. And then, if he doesn't have the balls to say 9/11 was an inside-out job, these cats are all liars and murderers, like Bill Hicks says. You know, then I don't care what he could, the blowback and the blow offs and the jerk offs and the circle jerk, he could take that in any direction he wants until a representative can say in public at these Fox debates, which they ignore him at, but yet he's on the TV. If he can't say 9/11 was an inside out job right then and there, then he's no representative of mine, no matter what his intentions are.
You know, I had a laugh because somebody once said, I forgot who it is and I can never recover it, said that when they have polls out, especially as you'll start to see, and you're starting to see them right now, the straw polls, show who's in front or whatever. First of all, I don't believe in straw polls. I don't believe in any of the polls that are done by Pew or, you know, the Washington Times or Washington Post or the New York Times or whatever. But I do believe that polls are used to manipulate people to vote for a certain candidate so that they don't have to force one in under duress as they did in 2004 in 60,
right.
You know, and in 52, I believe. Would that be right? No, 48. And there's an interesting anecdote, if I could, right now. There's a book called The Final Secret of Pearl Harbor by a retired admiral, Robert Theobald, who served at Pearl. He wrote a book in 54 because he was ripped about what took place that day. And he knew very well that the cabinet and Franklin Delano Roosevelt knew that the Japanese were coming. It had to happen. They needed it for another reason. And Tom Dewey, wanting to run against FDR in 44, knew that same thing. And Theobald chronicles. Now, listen, this is a guy that served at Pearl, and he was a rear admiral. Okay, so this wasn't a dummy. This is a guy who loved his country. But what happened was both parties, his own and the Democrats, and the Joint Chiefs of Staff told Dewey that if you open your mouth about Pearl, we are going to indict you on sedition. So he shut his mouth, and he lost to FDR in 44, and he lost to Truman in 48. Dewey, who some will say had dirt on his hands as well, never saw the light of day. He won 48. But he didn't win 48 because he had transgressed, and that is not going to happen. So my point is, people are manipulated into voting for the person that the handlers want in the Oval Office, and they will do things. I mean, you can start tracking positive and negative information and stories about all your candidates and Obama as well, and you can see how things are going to go. And this one individual again said, "Excuse me, you'll know who's going to be the president by whoever's ahead in the very last poll that they take. Because a lot of times, I don't think you're like this, and neither am I, otherwise we wouldn't be doing these shows. We're a little bit contrary to ordinary, but a lot of people want to say they voted for a winner. That's how sad that's become.
Right.
In 2000 and 2004, they blew it. Hence, they needed a Florida recount and an Ohio recount. But I will tell you that in 1876, Tilden won, but he wasn't the guy that was supposed to be in there. So the carpetbaggers, including a president-to-be Garfield, went into Florida, South Carolina, and Louisiana, did a recount, and voila, guess who came out the winner? Rutherford B. Hayes. So this is politics. This is what goes on all the time. That's why I don't care what idiot or what chimp that they put into the Oval Office. I couldn't care less. He's there not to do his bidding, but he's there to do the bidding of others. He doesn't do anything by his own volition, and if they do, they get assassinated, hence what we were talking off mic about with Kennedy. Was Kennedy a Turk? Did he know the way things were? Absolutely. I think he didn't have the stomach for it after a certain point, and he paid with his life. Same with Lincoln. I mean, you know, these things are not done by lone gunmen who just whack out and want to kill a president. So, I mean, that's the way politics are, and we're going to see the same thing coming. Michelle Bachmann is not going to be around after March. Rick Perry's a jerk. Forget it. He's gone. Mitt Romney, same old thing. He'll fold. But what I have to laugh at, and I'm asking everyone to consider this, do I care? No, but here's what's interesting. Rudy Giuliani, 2 weeks ago, hosted the Mobster Week on AMC. And Rudy Giuliani was a district attorney who made his oats by banging the mafia during his time there. Rudy looked great. Most telegenic I've ever seen him look. Spun anecdotes about who he busted. It was a great week. After that was over, he shows up at Yankee Stadium when the Red Sox come in. And here's his little photo op in a first row seat with his Yankee jacket on, his Yankee hat. You know, he has some woman next to him. I guess he rented. I don't know. But she's there. She's smiling. And here's another Rudy thing, you know. Now, 9/11, Rudy's going to come back out because he was mayor at that time. And he's going to be lionized during that period. Do you see where I'm going with this? Rudy is going to be run up the flagpole. Michelle Bachmann wouldn't even be an afterthought in March. All this stuff that goes on now is such a joke because none of these characters have come out first, last. They just go out there, test the water, see what's going on.
Right, and especially with the 10th anniversary of 9/11 coming, I don't think we've seen the end of that. Like Gerald Celente says, current events form future trends, so that might be a neat projection to graph out and keep our eye on. But with all of that, Ron Paul and Giuliani being related to 9/11, a lot of people make big hoodoos about NYC on 9/11/01, which obviously they should. But to some respects, that's, I don't want to say, you know, disrespecting the families, you know, like a lot of people claim, but there are other massive components to 9/11 that I think a lot of researchers just gloss over because they're told to by their favorite bullhorn. And you know, those being Pentagon and Shanksville, you and your path have come across some pretty neat stuff in regard to the Pennsylvania what happened there, and without using any terms that will offend anybody, do your best to run down some of that info as we come up on that anniversary very rapidly, so people can put those in their bullhorn bongs and smoke that.
All right, first of all, planes don't disintegrate. Bodies don't disintegrate. Never. Never. Didn't happen on 9/11 in the United States. It never happens. You can't do it. I would say to people, if you think that that's possible, go take a look on a number of websites that are dedicated for whatever reason to air catastrophes. I had saved some photos from a Russian plane that pitched nose down from 35,000 feet in the Ukraine. I think this was August, and I can't remember what year it was. I think it was 04. And you can Google that, and you can still find that stuff. And you have a very messy debris field full of plane parts, 2 6-ton Rolls-Royce engines hanging around, and a whole lot of black bags. On 9/11, we have no planes, and we have no bodies. We have a lot of anecdotes. Don't even start with that stuff, okay, because that's all crap. As you may or may not know, I mean, we ran the Jamie McIntyre tapes when he was at the Pentagon saying there's no plane here, and then later doing a dabba-dabba-dabba when he was on Fox to try to, like, or CNN, whatever it was, to try to explain that, but they never would play the whole tape. They never played the whole tape. They just played a little bit, and they faded out and put music in, and Jamie did his story. also in Shanksville. That's the messiest situation and probably the one that didn't work out as well per se because, and I'll go into that, but that's why everybody is focused on New York City. It was horrific. It was there. How do you argue with two buildings just vaporizing? But what we have come to find out, and you can even use the newspaper accounts to take a look at this, Flight 93 was not hijacked. It was not shot down. If you look at newspaper accounts, and I use the New York Times, you realize from eyewitnesses that they said they saw the plane descend slowly and continue with descent, and then it goosed up and cleared a ridge and went over on the other side. Nobody saw contact with the Earth. Lee Perbaugh, who is the one person who sings about seeing it, was somebody that was in a salvage yard next to the Shanksville crater. He came on board. His first day of work was September 10th, 2001. Lucky him, he was there just to see this happen the next day. He's the only one that says that he ever saw it. There's nothing in the Shanksville crater except garbage. Some of the photos of things being extricated are obviously prop jobs. I'm not saying they didn't put anything in there, but the thing is, you don't take a 757 or a 767, nose it into the ground, have it go down as little holes so the wings fold back like a Swiss Army knife, and no engines. Oh, they bounced elsewhere. Oh, that's great. Okay, fine. How did that happen? No body parts. I have a transcript of a exchange between Brian Cabell, who was a CNN reporter on the scene, to an anchor by the name of Daryl Kagan. And Cabell says, this is like a crash site I've never seen. And again, I'll offer that to you too, Jacob, if you want it, so that you can send it to people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he says, here I am at Shanksville, but there's another debris site, I think he says, 6 miles away. He goes, this is kind of strange. How could there be one? Oh, people said, well, there was a shoot down. Well, if there were a shoot down, there were about 20 eyewitnesses who said they saw no breach in the cockpit or cabin for the length of the time they saw it. And they saw it just until it supposedly crashed. Also, the debris field is ahead of where the plane was going. If the Shanksville crater is a fake site, then this other debris field is 8 miles ahead of where the plane went down in Shanksville. It isn't behind it. It's ahead of it. That can't be. It was on a northwest to southeast tangent. It crashes in Shanksville, continue that tangent southeast, and now you have a debris field in New Baltimore. How can that happen? It can't. If you have a breakup, you're not going to drop stuff ahead of where you're going. The bulk of everything went down in Shanksville. That's what they're calling the crash site. Oh, and something else happened, 6 miles away. Can't happen. Victor Thorne interviewed Cabell years later, and he said, did you think you had the story that day on the second debris field? And Cabell said, yeah, but men in suits told me I didn't. There you go. Now, here's what happened really recently. I can't go through everything because of time. But there was something up in the skies. People thought they saw Flight 93. What happened was there was an 82-year-old woman who contacted American Free Press, for which Victor Thorne writes. She had been reading Phantom Flight 93, which is a book based on heavily the interviews that I did with them on the old AM radio stations, the transcripted interviews and such. Well, she was moved to contact. She wanted to get a hold of Victor. She didn't know how to do it. She went to AFP. AFP got Victor. Victor called her up. They talked. He cell phoned me right after the conversation and said, here's what I did. He said, I'm supposed to call her back. And I said, okay. So I was out riding my bike. I got home. I was going to record it off the phone on my my software. And she didn't answer the phone. He had said to me, while she was talking to me, I heard her husband in the background who was like less than enthusiastic about her talking. These two are a married couple. They're both octogenarians. They live on a road just to the west of Indian Lake. Her claim was this, and you can go search this on Google if you want to, that the drone or whatever it was, because it wasn't loaded with people and it wasn't loaded with fuel, that went down to in a site just a little bit west of a road called Ingrund Mountain Road. If you do a search on that, you will see this road pitches down heavily, comes back up again, hits kind of like an apex, and then turns back down and meets New Baltimore Road. The reason why is that this is indicative of what you would call switchback roads. You know, when you're going up mountainous terrain, when you're ascending a mountain, that's why this road is so circuitous, if you will. She said that to the apex of Ingren Road, at its last highest point, about 3 miles or so to the west, 93 went down. She said she and her husband went up there, and the road is so bad they didn't think they'd make it any further or get back. I can't tell you what she saw because I never talked to Victor again about it thus far, and she wouldn't come back on. But she said that went down, there was a certain amount of flame and such, and that whatever was there was disassembled and taken out under stealth of night. I don't know how many nights it happened. The reason why that makes sense is, first of all, I did a reverse search, on the phone number that Victor gave me. She and her husband are alive and well, and they live, like I said, on this road that flanks Indian Lake to the west. She was in between Shanksville Crater and New Baltimore. That's the site that Cabela is talking about, that there is a debris field 6 to 8 miles away. Indian Lake Marina had debris in it. Nobody saw a plane crash. They came out when they heard and felt a crash. They come out to find this debris falling on them, which is basically seat cushions and paper. All right. Again, the plane was not breached. So what in the world fell in Indian Lake? My assumption is that if we have a plane that is a drone, it could have opened up a door and dumped stuff. Also, you had two white jets there that were in the area, very much seen. Could one of them have done that? What was the point? Just to enforce the fact that Flight 93 crashed. So, I mean, you have a crater, and if you consider that a fake site, then you have to have a controlled site. You can't shoot something down because you can't control where it's going to fall. And how do you sell Shanksville as the site if this old plane gets shot down, supposedly with Arabs in it and a bunch of passengers? What do you say about Shanksville? So it can't be shot down. There has to be a controlled site if you believe Shanksville Crater is phony, and it is. So, I mean, what she said made perfect sense because it is on that tangent from Shanksville across Indian Lake Marina and down in the outskirts of New Baltimore, which is also cold in some places. It could be Somerset. It's an unincorporated area, and that makes perfect sense then that would have happened. Could I make a case of that in court? Absolutely not. But like I said, I went back and I pieced together the stories that came out of 9/11. And also just recently I did this. There was a story out of the Pittsburgh Gazette. And then it talked about some 3-year-old child finding a piece of paper, which was like a canceled check for somebody in California because Flight 93 was going from Newark to California. So I take a look and where this individual lives on Baltimore Street, New Baltimore. Now that, again, is further southeast than everything else. And what people are saying is that southwest and southeasterly winds blew this stuff over a ridge from Shanksville, which is northwest, and one of the pieces fell on this guy's lawn. You see what I'm saying here? Southwesterly winds, southeasterly winds, winds are mentioned in the direction they come from.
Right.
Not go to. So Shanksville crashes to the northwest. How can southwesterly or easterly winds blow something from something northwest, something southeast? I know this is all like making people's heads swim. I'll send you that article too. This is the kind of crap that goes on.
Yeah, and I'll definitely I'll put a link to that under this. And as 9/11 approaches, the anniversary anyway, man, wouldn't that be neat if this couple and or just the wife decided to, are they mute for sure, or is there any hope that maybe a little more of this will come out, or somebody who's taken that information and ran with it? However it plays out, I hope that thread is definitely looked at.
Well, remember something, though, that this town is gearing up for this. This is going to be a big payday.
Oh, yeah.
For Shanksville and the surrounding area. You don't kill the golden goose. Even the mayor, though, was it Ernie Skull, was reported saying there's nothing out there. There's no plane out there. You remember the video of a Fox videographer that's sitting like at a bumper, on a bumper of a truck or something like that after what he did? And somebody goes up to interview him. I think it was another Fox network. And he said, "What did you see out there?" And the guy says, a hole.
Nothing. Yeah.
Remember that? He says it three times, and the third time, it's like, what do you want me to tell you, man? And that's what we're saying. And people are going, well, how could we be so hoodooed? Because you are hoodooed. Every other crash site that's ever happened in any other country, you see it clearly. This one, they pushed everyone back. Cabell, even when he was there, talked about being outside the perimeter, like this crash site behind me. And that's it. And they sold that. And there's problems with that, too. If you saw some other videos of that day that show a big old stain or a hole in somebody's macadam driveway and the buildings aren't touched. Have you seen that video?
It's not ringing a bell, but I've seen a bunch.
I just saw it. I mean, somebody sent it to me like 2-3 weeks ago. It's a reporter, a female, who is not on site. She's watching the monitor that's also showing us the same thing. And it wasn't the crater, which later, most of us all saw. That helicopter shot, you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
No plane parts. They call it debris. It's damn paper. So anyway, this one site, and I got to find this again. I can't tell if it's a hole or a stain in a macadam driveway with two buildings around it. I mean, somebody's property. And they were selling that as the Shanksville crater. As weird as that sounds, is as weird as it is. And I'm like, holy mackerel. And I sent that to Thorne. I'm going, they were selling this as the Shanksville crater at some time. So it's bizarre, but, you know, again, they tell people to shut up, and that's the end of it. One last thing I just want to mention. In the New York Times article on Tuesday, 9/12/01, Elizabeth Glick, who lost her husband, Jeremy, one way or the other, went on in a front-page story about how she talked to him on a cell phone. You cannot make a cell phone call from above the towers. It is impossible. So they were cruising at 35,000 feet, as the New York Times article said, and she was engaged with a conversation with her husband. All right, now, for a lot of reasons, that can't happen. So that goes fine. She goes on and on, cell phone call, no problem. In August 2004, and I have this with Keith Dudney, Reader's Digest comes out with an issue, I think it was August 04, with Oprah Winfrey on the cover. And in it, they revisit Elizabeth Glick and how her life has been since Jeremy's death. Somewhere deeper in the article, all of a sudden, as she's talking about what Jeremy was telling her he saw, she goes, oh, and he wasn't on a cell phone. He was on a seatback phone. Well, okay, now, which is it? And anybody can research that if they want to. So, okay, it's all about cell phones on 9/11, but it's all about seatback phones in August of 04.
Right.
And it goes on and on like this. You can't make a cell phone call from a damn Faraday cage, especially at 35,000 feet, because you're passing through zones one after another. I tried it. My wife tried it. Others have. You cannot do it. And the Edward Felt conversation that took place supposedly from a bathroom in Flight 93 about how a bomb went off. Well, first of all, you go try to make a cell phone call from a bathroom inside a Faraday cage. Right. And secondly, nobody on the ground saw any kind of breach of the cockpit or the cabin. No smoke, nothing. Nothing coming from the engines, like a SAMI or something like that, you know, a missile. No, nothing. The plane had no problems, you know what I'm saying, physically. And so that phone call is a contrivance. Now, what else took its place? That's the things of stuffing things of another show.
Sure. And as far as you know, those people interested or not concerned about the honeypot nature of the Pentagon, what's a pretty good direction? You've mentioned the group several times in some shows that have done excellent work at the Pentagon that don't get any play anywhere.
This is the strange thing even about Patriot stations. Craig Ranke from Citizen Investigation Team, and you can Google that or do a search for it. I didn't even want to say Google, just do a search on it. He went ahead, this California guy came over, spent many hours and days interviewing people and built a documentary around it. Nobody saw a Flight 77. The path that 77 supposedly took, if you will, was to the right of a Citgo station and its approach to the Pentagon. But the only thing that was large that day was a C-130 painted a little differently, shall we say, like maybe the 77 metallic light blue. And two Pentagon cops he interviews at the Citgo station say, we saw the plane. It was on the left side here. I'm saying left and right. He talks about directions, but I get screwed up. You look on a map, you'll catch it. but Renke went on about this. There was, I mean, nobody saw impact into the building. He said, yes, there was a large plane that probably was supposed to be it, but it pulled up over the Pentagon. And Ranke's contention is, and I think he backs it up, is that ridiculous photo we saw obliquely into the first floor of the building is not real. Now, how can you say that can happen? Well, you know, come on, man. I mean, we're in the video age. Stop.
Right.
But the other thing is that you see the original photos of the Pentagon. You have the size of a double car garage, a hole that size in the first floor. The second floor isn't touched. You can't see anything. They say it went through three rings, and you know this. I know you know, Jacob. I mean,
right.
how does an aluminum tube penetrate three rows of a brick shit house, or I'm sorry, limestone, and then penetrate through the third ring, but there's nothing there.
And then vaporize.
Yeah, I mean, so, right. Now, here's what's tragic. I lost a very long-time friend. I know two people who are pilots. One is from Delta, one is from Continental. My longtime friend flew for Continental, and he believes the story. And I'm like, how in the hell does a 7.6, or I don't care what series it was, I'm not going to get caught on that stuff because someone will say, well, it was a 7.5. I don't give a crap, all right? It's a big freaking jet. All right? How does that thing go into that hole? How do the wings fold back? What do you do with aluminum wings that have 6-ton engines on them on the ends? And they all fold up and go through the rabbit hole through three rings, and then nothing is found. And then, of course, later on, you see that the second floor was breached. But again, we're looking at what they say were explosions. But on the first hit, when they were out there still putting the foam on it, no damage to second floor windows, nothing. Nothing to the left or the right of that double garage door opening. In other words, where the hell did the 6-ton engines go? Oh, no, they were on the wings, and the wings folded up, and they all went through the hole. Now, that's what my Continental friend said, and I'm sorry, over time, we no longer talk. The pilot for Delta also was a naval reservist fighter pilot, and, of course, he said, no freaking way.
Right.
No freaking way. You have no marks on the grass. You have nothing on the second floor, and this guy glided this thing with how many hours in the seat, or is it all sim? And suddenly it just disappears. No body parts, nothing. Nothing to see. And that's where that Jimmy McIntyre thing came in, where he said at the beginning, no, there's no sign of a plane here. All right. That's lost forever, but, I mean, that I saved also, and his supposed damage control later on. Bucks.
Yeah, and so many people are willing to just dismiss this and focus straight in on the towers, which are important also. I just, you know, even for, you know, exercise sake, to stave off atrophy, as this anniversary approaches, people, you know, take a serious look at these things because they are, you know, as a whole, part of what we're talking about, and they're related. And if people could add all of them together, for those who want to know who done it, that'll get you in a better direction than what exotic technology may or may not have contributed, you know, to New York specifically.
You know, here's the sad part about it. The government kills its own, and they do it to advance agenda. And in the main situation, again, that was a cover-up. We lost maybe a dozen or so. All right? Then we go into the Lusitania. And I have a series up, in which I read excerpts of the book, The Lusitania by Colin Simpson, was published in 72. And he documents the whole thing, how Wilson was told by the Germans, look, we know basically, I mean, it was his terminology then, but we know that you're shielding munitions for England on passenger ships. And they sent a cable to their German newspapers that asked Wilson, do not do this. Do not send people over on the Lusitania. They wanted the ad to run in about 50 U.S. cities. It only ran in one. Wilson said he never got the thing, blah, blah, blah. Look, they were told. They allowed those passengers to go over there, and in sight of land, they died. That was about 1,200. Pearl was about 2,000. And now we're up to 3,000 with 9/11. I mean, Murder Incorporated is getting more and more voracious. But that's the nature of government, and you have to deal with it. That's the way it goes, and we're going to head for another triggering event, and it's going to be worse than the other ones. This goes on time and again. And sooner or later, you got to say to yourself, you know, if it smells like it and it walks like it, it probably is. And Harry Truman, by the way, gave us a little wink into the way things go when he says the only thing new is the history you don't know about.
Exactly.
I just supplant the word new with the only conspiracy is the history you don't know about.
Exactly. And it is real. You know, it's kind of the way it's always been. And,
yes.
You know, so many people are hip to 9/11, but, you know, I don't know about that Gulf of Tonkin or Pearl Harbor, you know, or the Lusitania or the Maine.
Or the Liberty, yeah.
It's all of them. That's how they roll. And for the fear-based mind control to, you know, propel itself into the future, these events have to get bigger and more drastic and more elaborate and more conundruming, more full of conundrums. So, you know, to bedazzle people. But that's, you know, the progression. That's the way it always has been.
They do.
Another thing I like about your website and your audios is they work in series. So you'll have, you know, the Informer series, the Lusitania series, the Why We Are Hated series. You know, and a lot of these. So tying subjects together, it's not so sporadic and chaotic. Because even in the alternative media, they'll tell you that the mainstream is full of it. But what the mainstream does in part of their obfuscation is dance around and portray World War One separate from World War Two, separate from the Civil War. When if you would take a series approach, much like you're doing on your website, you'll see how these things are progressions and they're trends and definitely connected, you know, in many ways. So a series approach, you know, is necessary. And you can't fit it all into a damn 9-minute segment or 42 minutes in an hour block without commercials. It's going to take a bigger attention span and you know, lots of audio strung together, you know, with a break in between to digest it. But that's and one of the things I had in my notes to talk to you about, but since we've been burning the minutes quickly, we'd probably even just save the whole thing for a part two, is the Civil War series, which I think a lot of people give lip service to, but in between the World Wars and the Revolutionary War, so much went on right up into during and after the Civil War that connects, you know, the false flag stuff, the military-industrial complex, you know, the secret societies, of which, you know, some people don't talk about, like you cover with the Knights of the Golden Circle or the Golden Dawn. I even forget. They're so...
Golden Circle were the ones that were here. yeah. And that would be Jesse James and John Wilkes Booth.
Yeah, and some of this stuff is so fascinating. And I've,
at
this point, termed the Civil War not the North versus the South, but the United States versus the United States of America. And if people don't know what that means, like I said, we'll save all that for a part two. But definitely... given me lots of clues. The contributor to your show and website that brought out a lot of the, let's say, assassination attempts, successful and otherwise, that happened in a 40-year span would make most people's head turn because Kennedy gets all the play and Lincoln's the junior varsity in that topic. But there was a whole lot of, let's say, poisoning, chicanery, and backstabbing going on that I don't think people really realize that because that approach wasn't successful, we had the Civil War. And though the system was designed to beat us into the pits of Hades, I guess to some interest at that time, it wasn't progressing to their liking. You know, few rays of hope were allowed to shine through the edifice of control. And so since a lot of these assassinations didn't go off as planned, intended, or their full dynamics reached, I think, you know, the Civil War was one of the consequences there.
And I know we're going to get out of here, but one of the things I'll just give an example of, the Civil War was not just about us. There was a lot of foreign intrigue involved with Britain and France, if you will, with the fading Habsburgs and the Vatican. And one of the things I found, and I'm going to send you this PDF as we talk, I'd always heard this, but I never really saw it. I'm just going to offer this as, kind of a tidbit that's kind of tantalizing, but to give you an idea that there were a lot of foreign entities that were involved in the Civil War or had a stake in it, and it was this. Lincoln in 63 importuned the Russians, Tsar Nicholas, to kind of help him out because the South was kicking some ass, downing merchant ships and also running the blockades themselves. So Tsar Nicholas sent a fleet to New York and a fleet to San Francisco. Now, I had heard about this, but I never found any documentation, and I finally did just a month ago. And I want to tell folks, there is a site called chroniclingamerica.loc.gov, and you can go into newspapers. They're digitized until about 1922, and you can go in there and read about things the way they were, which has been much sanitized as the accounts appear in our history books. And here's where I'm going to go. Nicholas sent the fleets out. That was a wink to both Britain and France to don't mess around. Like I said, I'll send you the article. So we had Russian Navy here in New York, in San Francisco, and they do a pretty good job of documenting that. I went into the New York Tribune, October 1st, 1863, and the front page story was, "We welcome the Russian naval officers and stuff." They had a march down Fifth Avenue, a parade, and we didn't hear a thing about this. There's not a mention of it. And the reason why we bought Alaska in 67 under Seward was because that was a payback, a quid pro quo, for the Tsar doing that. So the Tsar sent his fleets over. He said it got him out of Russia because he feared that Britain and France would go after them. Because remember, they fought in the Crimean War in 1848. And Russia got a bloody nose, but Russia wanted a rematch. So that was a sign to Britain and France, like, you want, if you get into the United States, we're going to come after you. And like I said, then I found it in the New York Tribune, October 1st, 1863, with the parade down Fifth Avenue. The Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. Well, the Russians have been here, and there's not a trace of it in any of our history books. And I tell you, it's fascinating. I'm going to send that to you. It's an absolute mind-blower.
It is, because I can't fit that into the slavery paradigm that the Civil War was all about. Any way you turn that block, it's not going in that round hole. So it's that was the point I was going to tease people with, is the Russian fleet on both coasts during that time. And that's if not a big clue as to the international nature of the thing. And what
of the conflagration? Yeah,
exactly, and it's fascinating.
Did I lose you?
No, can you still hear me,
Jacob?
We're sorry. Due to telephone company facility trouble, your call cannot be completed at this time. Will you try your call again later?
I could hear you fine. I didn't have anything else open and running, so
yeah, it just dropped out.
Just ghost in the machine. Yeah, but the Russian fleet here is obviously a big clue as to things weren't as we're led to believe as far as the Civil War goes, and there's so much to that with our current state of affairs that it's definitely worth like I said, a part two or a whole show.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But again, it just highlights the fact that there were foreign interests in this without a doubt. And there's plenty of stuff out there to speak to that, but it's been suppressed, and that's the problem with every, he who controls the past controls the future. And again, Orwell was right, and people don't know that this ever happened, and it would have to answer, it would have to open up more questions as to what really is going on, and that's what happened to me. So, I mean, if anybody can be moved by that, they can understand how they could take a look themselves. It is really interesting, I have to say, and I hate to say it's fascinating, but it is. However, the message is not good. But, look, you could have been born in Warsaw, Poland in 1935, and what a life you would have had you been there at that time. We are all subject to chance, and unfortunately, that's just the way it goes. Sometimes the news is bad.
No, for sure.
In this case, I mean, it is. So, I mean, what am I going to tell you?
Right, when I first came across that information on your with your shows, and it reminded me of the first time I saw the Honolulu Times that said, you know, Japanese bound to attack this weekend, or something to that effect, leading up to December 7, 1941, and, you know, your jaw drops, and you're like, there's no way. You know, this was in a newspaper, but yeah, no, it is. I call them the Janet Jackson retrospective. It's like every now and again a little bit of truth pops out, and they call it a wardrobe malfunction and tuck it back in the blouse, and off we go to some other topic.
Yeah, and I just want to say, like, you know, I'm not a Marxist. I'm not anything. You know, I'm not unhappy. I look at the world as it is. It's all about business. It's all about money. And you've heard me say, too, I mean, we are slaves to this plantation. We've had it pretty good. Now things are starting to change, but it's always been about the money. I don't think any form of government is the answer. So, I mean, I'm not a discontent or a malcontent. It's just that I understand the way things are. And, you know, deal with it. You know, you got another choice? I mean, I don't know.
Maybe a fourth party. No, I've always said we Miss America is chosen from 50 contestants. The leader of the free world comes down to one or two guys who are cousins from the same frat. We either need 50 parties or zero. And it's, you know, quipping at the fact that, you know, political solutions aren't there. But, you know, it's fascinating work. I've been definitely inspired and given lots of new information, let's say, that your mainstream alternative crowds never venture towards.
No.
And again, let's plug all the websites where all this is found. And
well, again, you're very kind about that, and I appreciate it. Mine is Visigothraw.com, Visigothraw.com. It's a corrupted spelling of Visigoth, but if you put the link up there, you know, that'll be fine. Think or Be Eaten, which is Angie's site, which is kind of like become a bit of a beehive or a labyrinth with other sources. I think that's a pretty good one. And I just want to mention also, on her site, at Think or Be Eaten, you click on the Null, I believe, and there are two sites for two links for The Informer and Montgomery. James Montgomery wrote a book called A Country Defeated in Victory. If you read that, he does a great job of doing the best he can to show you how this country was lost, you know, about 3 weeks after the meeting in Philadelphia. And it's all free. Just go there. You can read it. The CD Informer is up there as well. So it's thinkerbeaten.com. You click on the Knoll. You'll find your way through it. It's a lot of fun. We have a reading room there as well. And visigothraw.com as well. And also your sites are there, and with a number of your suicide.
Right. And just so people know, Angie from thinkerbeaten.com, which is a clearinghouse for, you know, lots of information. There's audio MP3s, there's e-zines. She writes a very witty blog herself, and we would put her in the category of a thinker since she has not been eaten yet. So yeah, that's been a permanent link on any incantation of website I've had for several years, and there's plenty to do if folks are bored or you know, sick of the circle jerk that all the three letter main and alternative networks have come across, and they want, you know, to get some series, some e-zines, some deep thought essays. Links to some zany audio madness I do. Think or Be Eaten is the place to go, and I credit Ange with, yep, you know, my online presence, because as a virtual stranger from lands afar, she cyberly spurred me into action and directions many times through the goodness of her heart. And now that I have a MP3 hosting website, excuse me, I know that that's not cheap, easy, free, or fun all the time. So she's got a big heart, and she's always been in it for the sake of promoting solid people doing their best with their circumstances. So that's a good place for anybody willing to expand their political horizons, thinkorbeeaten.com. A lot of your stuff is there. And you mentioned the Knoll, but it's the Grassy Knoll. You're truncating the name of the old show, The Grassy Knoll.
Right, right.
And all of that stuff has been there. Your newest incantation is at visigothraw.com. And I'll have all of that linked very beautifully and chronologically under the MP3 of this interview.
She also has the PBSblog.com.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of movies there, too. So, again, there's some entertainment. I mean, it's serious stuff, but, I mean, it's video. And, I fail to mention it. I just kind of stay with Think or Be Eaten. But there also is the PBSblog.com, just a treasure trove of a lot of documentaries, about the subjects we just talked about. And, again, like I want to thank you for having me on. It doesn't happen often for obvious reasons because I'm a pariah.
Right.
Now you are too, so that's great.
Well, I enjoy it. Generally, I figure the more grief you get, the closer you're getting to the proper direction. So I've even learned to let a lot of that slide, expect it, and then head that direction.